So you've all got a copy of the guideline. I think it looks absolutely fantastic. This is the previous guideline. As Vincent's mentioned a few times, we've got this. The difference here is basically a risk assessment model. So you've got a baseline, low rate of testing, and then through your clinical history taking, what you know about the patient, you identify a patient who's at increased risk, and you offer them an increased rate of testing. There are quite a few problems with that model, I believe. Firstly is, you know, who gets in that list. So all these lists out of all these different parts, you know, some of the people who might be considered at increased risk for one or more of these STIs would be by Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander status, country of birth, recency of arrival, IDU, non-injecting drug use, past STIs, recent STIs, contacts of STIs, condom use, partner numbers, outbreak regions, etc. So it turns out that basically what is on this list, if somebody's done a study, it'll indicate that there's a group that's increased risk. So actually this list, to a certain extent, being driven by the researchers rather than actually by the population. The question is how effective we are at identifying people on that list, particularly out of a specialist sexual health environment. You know, are GPs really going to ask patients, did you have 9 partners, 10 partners, or 11 partners in the last 3 months? Did you use the alcohol before, during, the after the sex? So basically, you know, what is the evidence really for that evidence-based list? Another thing would point out, in the time since this, this is when it was last reviewed, this is rates of infections in men in Australia, this is rates of, sorry, syphilis and in gonorrhea. So actually, people who are at, I guess, not at increased risk in 2018 are at higher risk than people who were at increased risk were in 2013. So I think we had a good case to make is that everybody needs to be having quarterly testing. And also the PrEP demonstration studies, as Chris mentioned, the frequency of testing, you continue to get positivity, you continue to get incident infections. So the major change in the recommendations was a 3-monthly default testing, abolish risk-based testing frequency, and aligns with the PrEP guidelines. And apart from being simpler, and one of the actual strengths of the stigma guidelines has always been its simplicity. That's why people recognise them, that's why people use them. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having 96 pages of guidelines, but sometimes if you've got a half-page guideline, it really works. And I think by abolishing the risk-based assessment, I think the trend really is towards population-based screening rather than some sort of intervention to get a to identify the category. So if you've had a look at so this is basically the guideline here actually. So it's not just 2 pages; it's 2 lines. The rest of it is just padding it out. So 3-month testing for sexually transmitted infections in all men who have had any type of sex with another man in previous 3 months. Any type of sex is a great term, isn't it, really? I'm really quite proud of actually we came up with this very highly simplified. Men who have sex with men who are not sexually active or in monogamous relationships may be tested less frequently, but at least annually. So showing it to some colleagues, not just the ones on our panel, somebody said, you know, why would a not sexually active person need to be tested at least annually? It's like, it's a guideline. it's not compulsory, it's a guideline. Yes, I'm yet to meet those non-sexually active people. Here's a list of the... tests that we're recommending. Fairly non-controversial, I think. And you'll see that on the back pages we've added some information about self-collecting anal swabs. This guideline is inclusive of trans men. Vincent mentioned about the DARE, and we've gone to a lot of effort to align this with the... with the PrEP guidelines. And recognising, I guess, that the main obstacles to uptake of testing are basically not getting tested or not testing frequently enough, and people not having particularly an anorectal swab. So I'd like to thank Stigma and Chi and Alyssa from New South Wales Health for the opportunity to do this. Craig Cooper and Positive Life, who were the handle the contract with us, like to thank for the PHN for funding it. It's been a great process. Thank you.